Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Clint Eastwood's 1990 film, The Rookie. Joining us today, I've got my good friend and roommate, Pat Miller, here. Pat, how's it going, man?
Doing good, Ben. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Also joining is our trusty co-host, Tyler Brands. Tyler, how are things?
Ben, it's hot in Florida.
You're
today.
Recording from a remote location this week. Am I right? Is that why your audio?
Yeah, that is. I'm somewhere in the Everglades. don't ask me where, but yes, I'm microphone-less, so.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll make do for this week. Joining us also is a very special guest. Elizabeth Rapp is a writer for Film.com and Chud.com. She's also a huge Clint Eastwood fan and one of my favorite movie writers on the internet. Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming onto the show this week.
Oh, no problem. thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Tyler, I think, you know, last week we started what we call the character name game until we come up with a better name for it. And this is a new game that we've got on the podcast where one of us picks...
Name that character.
What's that?
Name that character.
Well, it's not necessarily naming the character because our job is to name the movie which the character comes from.
Yeah.
So to explain the rules for those of you who are just joining us for the first time, very small little game we came up with. Basically, one of us on the panel comes up with a character name and informs the rest of us, and at the very end of the show, we have to guess what movie that character is from. So last week we did David Levinson, I think, from Independence Day. And this week, Tyler has the honor of selecting the character name. So Tyler, tell us the name now, and at the very end of the show, we'll go back and all of us kind of try to make our guesses.
All right, are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
The name is Joshua Foss.
Foss. All right. Well, listeners at home, be thinking of it as well and offer your mental guesses as we go through near the end of the show. So moving on, we normally like to start the show with a segment called Media Consumed, where we talk about what we've been watching lately as far as TV and stuff like that. You know, if we've seen any concerts or attended any sort of special events in the area. So, Pat, what have you been watching lately?
I don't know if I'm going to steal this one from you, but Band of Brothers, which I guess is about 10 years old at this point. I think it's like 9. But, you know, just kind of started watching that 2 episodes in. I think it's 10 episodes total. It's pretty good so far, you know. I'm enjoying it. It's not what I thought it would be. I thought it would kind of be like, you know, like every other war type movie. I thought it would follow pretty heavily with Saving Private Ryan because it's a Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks collabo. But you know, it's its own creation, and I think it does well. It's what so far at least, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely going to talk about that too, but that's fine. I mean, it's big enough where I think that'll be fine if it's both our selections for this week. Yeah. We did watch the first 2 episodes. I liked the second one. A lot better than the first one. The second one is called Day of Days, and it's about Easy Company, which is the kind of airborne unit that we're following in the show, basically taking out this post. Like they have this drop, and it's just utter chaos from the beginning of the episode all the way to the end. And it seemed a bit shorter than the previous episode, but it was so intense. Like the battle depictions and everything. My only kind of complaint with the show that I have so far is that the characters haven't been developed well enough for us to be able to like know them by name yet. I think some of them are, but for the most part, they're all kind of they're in this unit and we're kind of following the same group over and over again, but they don't, I don't know. I just feel like because we're so early on in the series, we haven't had a chance to really get to know them that well yet.
Yeah.
Tyler or Elizabeth, have any of you guys seen Band of Brothers at all?
I saw parts of it. I didn't see the whole thing, and it was so like grueling. I feel bad that I didn't watch the whole thing, but I find like that all World War II movies, like it's so sad. You know, I feel really bad. I don't ever get through the whole slog of like the Pacific and Band of Brothers. I didn't get through all of them, but it's good. I mean, it's I think it's one of the best, you know, war depictions of war they've done, especially on TV. And definitely, it holds a candle to movie-wise. I think it's better than Saving Private Ryan. There, I said it.
Nice. Yeah, the cinematography and stuff is amazing in it as well. Like, all the production design and everything, all the effects and everything. It's, yeah, it just looks really fantastic. Okay, so I guess, Elizabeth, why don't we just go ahead and go with you? What have you been watching this week?
It's terrible. I haven't really been watching any TV, because I don't, everything's off that I normally watch. I've been watching True Blood like crazy, which I shouldn't.
Okay.
My sister has been making me watch The Colony, which is this reality show that's playing on Discovery with the conceit that a post-apocalyptic event has happened and they're the last survivors on Earth. I hate it because I hate reality shows, yep. Most of them. But it's really kind of funny because you wonder – we got in this really big debate because, you know, these people, like, really are really getting into this idea of being the last people on Earth. And it – you know, there's – to me, I don't know that I could ever lose my – frame that much of like my frame of reference. Like at one point one of the people got kidnapped and she was like, you know, screaming and kicking and fighting the, you know, like bad mutants that had kidnapped her or whatever.
Yeah, I see how that would make sense in a narrative, but when you know that none of this is true, yeah.
Exactly. And so we got in this huge debate. Like my sister's like, you would be scared, like if they grabbed you and put plastic over your head and dragged you to somewhere, I'd be like, no, I would know that ultimately nothing was going to happen to me. That this isn't really the end of the world.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been really funny. And then there's parts of it, though, that it's so typical reality show idiots that, to me, because I've seen a lot of end of the world movies, that, like, the one guy, like, was supposed to be standing guard duty, and then he got sleepy, and he went and took a nap. And then, of course, like, these raiders came in and took all their stuff. And I was like, you know, if you read The Road, I don't think you'd be sleeping.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd sleep ever again. Even at the suggestion, you know, by the way, there might be, like, cannibals coming. You'd be like, okay, I'll stand guard. Like, even if I knew it wasn't real.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, like, there's enough of me that can get into the fantasy that I'd do that. But I find, like, yeah, their dramatics really over the top. Like, you know.
I'm right there with you as far as the kind of despising reality TV in general. I don't know, that does sound, and I've certainly never seen the show and I don't plan on championing it here on the podcast. I'm just saying that does sound like something, at least it's going one step further than a normal reality show and at least asking people to kind of invest in a reality that they're creating as opposed to just like a mundane thing. Like,
well, they are filming it in like Louisiana, like in some like devastated parts. I mean, this, like, looks wise, it fits and everything, yeah. And they hunt alligators and stuff. There's a part of it that I also find almost offensive on some level because they're killing a lot of wild animals to eat.
Really?
It's like, well, I don't know if I can get behind that because this is all fake. You know,
yeah.
It isn't like, I mean, I get the point, but I don't know. It kind of bothers me when they do that on shows. Like, here's an alligator, you can kill it now. I mean,
yeah. How far are you willing to go?
Yeah. I don't know. There's, I mean, like, I love. Like, Destination Truth is a reality show that I like, and I sort of still like Ghost Hunters, but, yeah, I don't get into some of the survival ones. Although the historical-based ones that the England was doing for a while was really fun, except until they made everybody sick in the Bronze Age, and then they stopped doing it. But, yeah, I mean, it's not really something I champion, but she's been making me watch it, and now, like, an expert on it. And
gotcha.
Like, how to, you know, purify water and how you can make, like, gas out of frying grease.
All right, well, at least it's teaching you something.
Yeah.
I'd resort to cannibalism almost immediately.
Yeah, I mean, they're sort of like that. Like, I don't like any of these people. I'd be killing them.
Wouldn't you win the show if you ate everybody?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a level of what I got really into it. I have what it takes to survive. Duh.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
awesome. $1 million.
All right, well, yeah. Tyler, what have you been watching lately?
Yesterday I went to the University of Florida's opener football game. They played the University of Miami of Ohio.
Okay.
And it was pretty good. It was really hot out, but surprisingly, Ohio played pretty good against the Gators. And, you know, you may know how big of a Gator fan I am. So, but overall, it was pretty good.
I thought the Gators played bad, Brands. I got to tell you,
Hang on. For the listeners, Tyler's not a Gator fan. He doesn't care about them at all.
Yeah, I mentioned how well Ohio played, and I guess that may be because Florida played so poorly. But, you know, they had like 120 yards overall, and Florida had like negative 16.
That may be a bit exaggerated, but I get your point.
No, that was up on the screen, baby.
Oh, okay. At one point of the game, yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah.
Also, yesterday, Joe and I checked out SummerSlam 1995. I don't know if you guys are familiar with wrestling pay-per-views, but that's a pretty big one. and instead of watching a current one, we watched one 15 years old. So a lot of the guys were dead. We had a bet, and you know, if you were over or under 3.5 people dead, like, you won. And I think I went over, and 4 people were dead that we saw, so I won the bet.
Nice, congratulations.
But that was pretty good to watch. There was a casket match. Those are one of my favorites, where you have to defeat your opponent and then place them in the coffin and shut the lid.
Wow, that is.
I don't know how negative that sounds, but it's one of the more exciting matches you can watch.
Okay. Good stuff. Well, yeah, I mean, maybe this...
Nice to meet you, Elizabeth.
What's that?
I said, nice to meet you, Elizabeth.
Oh, hi. I'm impressed. Like, man, I feel so lame. Like, I, you know, TV, video games, books. I don't move to wrestling.
Tyler, I guess this would be a chance for you to plug your new wrestling...
I'll definitely plug it at the end. Don't worry.
Okay,
about that.
All right. That's fine. Okay, well, let's move on into our review of The Rookie, shall we? I don't know. Why don't we, Elizabeth? Why don't you start? Like, what did you think about this movie and kind of where it stands among Eastwood's work? Because I know you're a big Eastwood fan.
Well, I definitely think it's one of his worst movies. It was. I feel like he was asleep through the whole thing. You know, like, he doesn't act that well. And I mean, I'm not going to say he's like the greatest actor of our time or anything. He's not. He's definitely not somebody who can stretch it, but yeah. He's really bad in this. And the directing is bad. All the performances around him are bad. It's the dark ages of his career. Like, there was a period, like the 80s was, you know, sort of the mid to late 80s was really bad for Clint Eastwood. And this is like the epitome of that, yeah. In my opinion. I mean, it's a terrible movie. I think the last time I watched it, I tweeted something about it. People were like, I love that movie. And it's like, why? Why? It's bad. There's nothing to like about it. Nothing. There's like one scene that's worth watching, and that's it.
Yeah, I had never even heard of this, and I consider myself a fairly decent Eastwood fan. And I, you know, he starred alongside Charlie Sheen and also directed this movie, and it's like... Yeah, I have no idea what he was thinking, what he was doing. Tyler, what did you think about this?
Yeah, I felt like Eastwood owed someone a favor and plopped this out. I don't know what you want to call it. Yeah, I mean, I sat in front of the TV for 2 hours, and I have no idea what happened for the most part. I think I know the scene that you're talking about because I really enjoyed one of the scenes. But yeah, like I agree with everything else you said, Elizabeth. Like, just... poor acting. I didn't believe Charlie Sheen for a second. They duplicated the beginning scene at the end that I didn't enjoy. It was terrible.
Pat, how about you? What did you think?
Well, Ben, I'm going to be honest with you. I got about, we'll say, 50 minutes into this movie, and then I fell asleep. So I kind of missed the middle 30, but... when we came, when me and you watched, kind of rewatched the parts that I missed, and I tend to believe that it didn't matter anyways, you know, like, yeah. The scene where Charlie Sheen, just goes wild and burns down that bar, that was one that I missed, but by missing it, I missed nothing vital to the plot of the movie. So it was just in general, like, not very good, but I don't think I hated it as much as some of the earlier films that we've talked about this year.
I don't know. I kind of hate it more than some of those earlier films because it's just so bland. Like, those other ones, I feel like were some of the ones that were, you know, of lower quality. I feel like were kind of spectacular failures to some degree. Mm-hmm. Like, at least they were shooting for something high,
yeah.
and just missed it completely. But this is just like, it's almost offensive because of how stupid it is.
Yeah.
And just like, it's so literally like there's every cliche for a buddy cop or just a police procedural thing that you can imagine in this movie. I mean,
yeah,
if you're listening
and
to
it's
this,
totally like all over the place too. Like it's not even like it starts out kind of funny, then it goes to a very dark place, then it starts out, then it goes like kind of funny again. Like it's just like up and down. And it's funny that you said that about falling asleep, because I watched like an hour of it like a year ago, and then I was like, this is bad, I give up, and I stopped it, and then it went off of Netflix instant. And then a year later, it came back, and everybody had been like, you need to finish the movie because it gets better. Wow. And so I started, and it remembered like where I had left off, and I was like, I kind of don't remember what happened before this, but I think I'll be okay.
Yeah.
It was like, I watched like the last, yeah, like 30 minutes maybe, and it was like, no, it didn't get any better.
Yeah.
Why did everybody lie to me?
Yeah.
It's just like, it was culling scenes from every other thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many, like, textbook police movie scenes in this. There's like, you go into the bar and get, you know, you're the, you know, Eastwood and Charlie Sheen go into the bar, and they're clearly like the fish out of water, and one of them gets up, and then, like, there's like the Beverly Hills Cop-esque restaurant scene where Eastwood like throws a cigar in the guy's drink. There's a junkyard scene with a magnet that picks up the car. It's just like everything that you think is going to happen when every one of those scenes begins happens.
And there's like
the exactly
inevitable
the
like clash of ages, you know, like, I don't like you, old man. Well, I don't like you, punk. You know,
yeah,
I've been doing this since you were, you know, I don't like some sort of reference to before he was even conceived. I don't know, whichever
yeah.
popular one you want to use.
Yeah. And
there's
Eastwood,
a sexy Spanish lady.
Yeah, Eastwood grabs the sprinkled donuts and hurls them out the window.
That part I liked. No more of these.
Yeah.
I run a tight ship.
Yeah.
I think if there's one part of this movie I can maybe get behind, and by getting behind I mean like tolerate. I thought a few of the one-liners were pretty funny. The one at the end where it's something like Clint Eastwood says, like, there's 100 reasons to not kill you right now, but I can't think of a single one. I thought that was good.
Yeah.
The one about something
That's
being
dirty.
Like a tooth fairy.
Yeah.
You remember that one?
Yeah, like, in the beginning of the movie, the Eastwood and his first partner in the film, like, break up this kind of illegal car theft ring or whatever, and somebody made some reference to Santa Claus. And Eastwood goes, hey, what's your name? And he goes, Santa Claus, to like one of the thugs. And then Eastwood shoots out the back of a window and goes, I'm the tooth fairy, try again. It's just like, that doesn't even make any sense in any capacity. Like, I don't care what context you put that in. It
yeah.
just doesn't, like, I don't know.
I guess that's the spectacular failure part that you mentioned earlier. Those one-liners
yeah.
kind of do that. And so that's what makes them good, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I have to say, like, one of my favorite scenes, and it's like the only, one of the few scenes that Eastwood looks like he has a spark of life behind his eyes, because he's like asleep through the whole movie, like, I've done this before.
Yeah.
And the only part that I actually like laughed at was the part where they, after the car crash, and he's like, and Charlie Sheen makes some reference to the video that him and the Spanish lady made. And he's like, you know, I remember what Charlie Sheen said something about she was sitting on your face and just dirty, but and Eastwood just suddenly goes, it wasn't my face.
Yeah.
I was like, do that. He's got a point.
Yeah,
there's like two scenes like that pervert, and he's like just so embarrassed that Charlie Sheen knows what he was up to.
Yeah, he takes pride in the fact that he was raped as a hostage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the point I wanted to bring up. Eastwood was pretty much raped on film, and no, you know, I guess because it's Clint Eastwood and he was like openly accepting it, it's not considered rape, but I thought it was rape.
I mean, I was sort of intrigued. In fact, when I was watching it, not too long ago, you go back to my Twitter feed, it's probably on there, which was, I was like, so would this work? I mean, like, if you were like dancing around in some sexy lingerie, you're like this villainous, and you cut the guy with some razor blades, and like you could still rape him. I mean, I know how male biology works a little bit.
Yeah.
If he's scared.
Yeah, I don't know what is going on here. That scene in particular was just like, it went on for way too long as well. And then you're just like, okay, we get this. And then it just goes in. Right. And it's like Eastwood had the choice to cut that scene down, but he made the decision as the director to keep that going as long as it did. So I don't know what
that's. Oh, hell yeah, he did.
He's like, this is the one time.
I still got America.
Yeah. I don't know. There's so many aspects of like the script and stuff that are just like, I don't know, just poorly written, you know, thrown together and with the most like haphazard way. Like Eastwood is apparently this ex stock car driver or something, and he makes all these references about how he's always, you know, always been small time, whether it was on the circuit or on the force, and like all these like just ham-fisted metaphors and stuff that it's like, dude, you're so far above this kind of work. What is going on here?
Yeah, it's
weird.
They
obviously wanted like a 1970s Dirty Harry movie, because towards the end with like the chase scenes, I mean, you kind of see that with like Sudden Impact and Magnum Force and maybe The French Can a little. You just kind of see like a return to like the cop drama. But as far as like the storyline and what was going on in this case, it was just... And, like, it was just really bad to keep up with. Like, you just kind of felt hassled that you had to keep up with this stuff. And you're like, this makes no sense. I shouldn't be watching that. You know, it wasn't a movie that gets you involved as an audience member.
I like, almost wonder if it was like a... Yeah, like a Dirty Harry concept that got like tossed out and then like brought back. Like, oh, I need to make another cop movie or something. It's because it's so uneven. And it feels like there are scenes that were meant for a Dirty Harry movie, but... And yeah, the crime is all convoluted. It's like, are they selling cars or is it drugs or is it
then,
drugs inside
that,
of cars? I'm so confused.
There's that scene where Raul Julia, who Tyler, I know you're a big fan of because he portrays General Bison in the live action Street Fighter movie, the Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Gomez Adams and the Adams Family.
Yeah, he's like. Clearly Hispanic, but playing a German guy, and you know, this terrible
he's
accent
really
where he
racist,
always throws too. Like every time he says the, it's like zeh. It's just like this most like stereotypical German accent that you could come up with, and it doesn't match.
And it doesn't
at all
fit like their crime, like because you get the impression he's a drug lord, so he should be Spanish, and she's Spanish. So, like, that makes, like, you think they're, like, Colombian drug lords or something, and then there are all these German references come in, and you're like, why is he making German slurs at a Spanish guy? And then it's like, oh.
He's using, like, turn-of-the-century stereotype slurs and stuff, like, womps and, like, all this stuff, and you're like, wait, no one says that anymore.
Yeah. And
there's
yeah, like
you do bratwurst and shut up. Like, what? He's Spanish.
Yeah. And then, like what you were talking about too, with their crimes being unclear. It's like there's a scene where he's on a balcony of this expensive looking apartment or something, and he's like talking to the woman, and he says like, "Oh, we need to move on again," you know. And then he's like, "But first, I've got some loose ends to tie up with," you know. Again, it's just like piss poor writing. But but it's like. Why do you have to leave? I don't understand. Like Eastwood is like coming down on your operation, but you can just move to another city or something. He's talking about leaving the country and stuff. Like there's nothing.
It's kind of like you're really, you know, like obviously well connected. You have a lot of money. Maybe you can just pay off some city officials because I assume this was what you were doing anyway. And that Eastwood was basically like the crazy cop that nobody was listening to anyway. Like there's all that weird like nobody listens to old cranky. Isn't it Nick? His name is.
Yeah.
Like nobody listens to cranky Nick. He's small time. So it's like why does he have to move?
Yeah.
It's like he's not really posing that much of a threat to me. Cause, again, it just seems all over the place.
Yeah.
And well, then let's
go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was saying, we got to mention my favorite, like, Swince worthy. Could you not get another take of that, Clint? Where Charlie Sheen wets his face, is like, it's time for me to stop being afraid and time for people to start being afraid of me. It's like, oh, it's so bad. Like it, and there's like that synth beat behind it, you know, it's so bad. It's like you maybe was he on coke or something at the time? I mean, he's so flat. Like there's no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, his, what is it? His relationship with his dad? It's all like that. There's that corny thing too.
Yeah, where his dad, where Charlie Sheen's dad is like some sort of millionaire or something. It's played by Tom Skerritt, who basically just like reprises his role as Jester from Top Gun, but just has a lot of money in this time around.
It totally was. It's like they transposed the Jester scene in Top Gun, and I can't tell you what to do. So. Yeah, but you can graduate with the rest of your, oh, it's not, well, I'm not like the police. Okay, hold on. Take two. We can do another, take that, right, Clint?
Yeah.
I don't like doing more than one take.
Well, what were you going to say, Tyler?
It was kind of weird. I kind of saw Clint Eastwood's character in Gran Torino. I couldn't remember what his name was in that, but it sounded pretty similar to the guy in this one. And
yeah, because it is. It's Walt Kowalski.
This movie.
It's Walt Kowalski in Gran Torino. And it's Nick. Polkotowski.
Yeah,
there's a lot of Polish jokes. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I thought that too watching. I was like, is he really related?
Well, let's talk a little bit about Charlie Sheen and his performance. Like, what did you think about Charlie Sheen in this movie?
I thought it'd fit right in with this, with the crappiness of this movie. It's definitely a part of it. He didn't stand out as being excessively bad to me. Just kind of this movie on a whole did. So I don't want to rip Charlie Sheen for being the reason that this movie was bad.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that scene in the very beginning where he's like having these flashbacks about how he killed his own brother because he asked him to jump over a roof or something and like doesn't make it. And you're like, why weren't these kids like supervised in any way at this time? And then they're
rich enough to have nannies and stuff. Like, what? It seems like a failing of the rich parents.
It's basically just turns into an excuse for this like overblown drama between Charlie Sheen and Tom Skerritt at the end, where he's like, do you blame me for the death of my brother? Like, it's just this, like completely and totally laughable thing that you're like,
isn't there like something like, I felt guilty for 20 years and I'm not going to feel guilty anymore? I mean, there's like this whole, and his dad's like, I never blamed you, son. What?
And Charlie Sheen is portrayed as this kind of like, I don't know, I guess it says in the Netflix description that he's hot-headed, which I guess is some sort of play on the fact that he burned that bar to the ground. But
It was more like he was incredibly wimpy and disrespected. I mean, I like when Nick gets taken hostage and everyone's like, oh, well, stupid Charlie Sheen was with him. He's like the butt of every joke at the department, like kick me signs are put on his back and stuff. He's like the cop that gets the other cop's coffee. Maybe that's what they mean by hot-headed.
Yeah. There's like that part where he, I'm not even gonna. Yeah. This movie is bad if you guys haven't figured that out by now.
Charlie Sheen, he needs to be in like comedies. Like, he's funny in like Major League and this Hot Shots, and I liked him in Spin City. He replaced Michael J. Fox in Spin City. I'm not gonna say anything about Two and a Half Men because I never watched that show, and I don't really think it's that funny. But like, to see him in a serious role like this, it is quite laughable because he doesn't portray it very well. And I know he was in Platoon, which I haven't seen, and I think they praised him for a good dramatic role in that. But he wasn't good at all in this movie, and I don't take him seriously as a dramatic actor ever again.
I think Charlie Sheen has the ability to do drama. Like, Platoon, that you mentioned, was really good, and I thought he was pretty great in that. And then Wall Street also. A lot of people don't necessarily care for Wall Street. I'm a big fan of the original. You know, the sequel's coming out later this month. But he plays Bud Fox in that movie, which is kind of like whatever Shia LaBeouf's character this time around, the kind of young protege to Gordon Gekko. And I don't know, I thought he was really awesome in Wall Street. So for me, I think he's there. I think he's capable of it. I kind of look at Charlie Sheen the same way that I look at Mark Wahlberg, where I think he's capable of doing drama, but yeah, I think you're right, where he's probably better utilized in comedic performances.
Yeah, I think there was potential. I think if somebody had rewritten the script, like given the script a third or fourth draft, like it could have played on, he could have been like sort of a young Martin Riggs. I mean, sort of, like this you know, kind of screw up, but who, you know, was funny or charming or something. I mean, he's just completely flat, and it's, yeah, he's sort of overwrought, but yeah, he's not really badass enough to be, because like that's the conceit of the movie, like he's such a wimp, and then he grows up. So, you know, it would have maybe been better if he'd been like this kid that was, you know, days away from his 21st birthday or something, that, you know, screws up and then has to make it right, but is kind of a clown or something. I don't know. It, like, doesn't, it's the, yeah, that brother subplot that doesn't work. Yeah. Like, if I had been the director, I'd been like, let's just cut this out, because it has no bearing on the rest of the movie. I mean, it's different if, like, you know, screenwriting run one. Maybe, like, his brother had been killed by, like, a serial killer or something, and that's why he became a cop, and then they're hunting that very serial killer.
Sure.
That, to have, like, this stupid thing of, like, I pushed my brother on the roof just doesn't go together well. The flashbacks don't go together well. It's like In the Line of Fire is just a movie it's kind of reminiscent of in some way. The flashbacks serve to the story. He's torn apart inside that he might lose another president, whereas this kid, you know, Charlie Sheen isn't going to lose another brother off a roof. I mean,
It was just one of those useless attempts to try to create, like, character background, and it was way too far into the movie to actually add to the character development of the film. It happened at, like, hour 30, right when things started to wrap up, where they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, he has some tiff with his dad because his brother died at some point. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess that explains why he can get the $2 million. And it's just, I've seen movies like this before, and that never works. You can't just implement character background at the end of the movie.
Yeah, it's like, if I don't know if Sheen was on some downers, they were like, oh, let's, I keep making drug jokes, it's terrible. It's like, let's make explanation why he's sad, you know, like, you know, to write one in real quick. I don't know.
And
the stuff with him and his wife, I mean, that's just another storyline that isn't addressed until the very, I mean, I understand that it's addressed at the very end, but it wasn't anything I was worried about. Even at the end, I was like, okay, they resolved that. I don't even know what they resolved. He would just not talk to her at night, and that was about it.
Sure, yeah. And then they expect it to be like, they expect it to be this huge, dramatic, like, tension-filled moment when he's trying to race back to get to the house.
Yeah.
He ends up bolting through the door on the motorcycle and
ruining that nice house.
Yeah.
And what was her deal? Like, I feel like there's something I've blanked out. Like, didn't she do something stupid, like open the door to the guy, or there was
a lieutenant.
Yeah, he posted a cop.
Yeah, there was a point there that it was like you should have, there was like 5 minutes there where she could have done the right thing and prevented it all from happening, and she didn't. I don't remember what that was.
Yeah, I care so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole part where she was like, I was aiming for the knees, but she shot him 4 times in the back, and I was just like, this is so bad. Like, it was just one of the moments where you're just like, oh, God.
Well, you know,
she should be the cop. She's like a way better shot than Charlie Sheen.
Yeah. Kind of along those same lines, Tyler, there's like parts where in this movie it's like dialogue is just replaced and kind of re-uttered by other characters as a way to be effective or something. Like, you know, there's the part where Sonia Braga's character shoots Charlie Sheen in the back like 3 times, and she's like, amateur, and just shoots him in the back. And then later on in the movie, that kind of reversal of that, where he ends up shooting her, but drops the same one-liner right in front of it. And like that kind of thing, Tyler, you mentioned earlier, like the same at the very end of the movie is kind of the same as the very beginning, because it's just new people. But the dialogue almost stays exactly the same, and it's just like, what lazy writing. Like, oh, we've heard this before. Yay, we're children. We can remember what we just saw 2 hours ago. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Well, it's supposed to be, like, witty. Go ahead.
There were just some parts at the end scene. I don't know what scene you were talking about at the very beginning, Elizabeth, but the explosion where they're talking in the car while in midair.
Yeah.
You can't hear another person when there is, like, you know, 1,400 pounds of explosions behind you. And then, like, and then they kill Raul Julia, and he's on, like, the carousel, the luggage carousel.
Yeah.
And he just goes around and, like, goes away from them back into, like, the airport security area. Like, and I was like I was making like baggage claim jokes. Like this part wasn't serious at all. Like I didn't take it seriously. I was cracking jokes. It was just a bad scene overall.
Well, yeah. And it's actually, that's the whole end. That's like tonally, that again, it's like so over the place. I don't think it's even meant to be serious. Like the end is like screw it, and like
right.
It gets all like funny, and like at the end, at the very like last shot of them is them like lighting up the cigars, and it has that like we're saving some chemistry for the sequel thing, you know? Like yeah. there was a jumping off point. Like this is the one of many.
It's like, yeah, no. I mean, well, Elizabeth, you mentioned earlier how it's the movie is just completely all over the place. I thought that particular part, that ending sequence where they're, you know, right before he shoots Raul Julia, by the way, he shoots him in the head from like six yeah. inches away. Like the camera is looking at it like from this POV shot, like up at Eastwood's face, and he's just got this look of utter malice on his face. Like he is just going to completely wreck this guy. And then you think that there's a chance that he might not do it, but no, he just blows his head off. Like,
That was a Dirty Harry moment if I've ever seen one.
Yeah.
Outside of a Dirty Harry movie.
Right.
Yeah, but pretty sure like that scene and when Charlie Sheen shoots the girl in the head for no apparent reason, even though she's already incapacitated, all he had to do was, you know, slap the gun away and he'd be like, they were both terrible cops.
Yeah.
But on the more scientific note, I don't know anything about guns, but if you get shot like that close, I'm pretty sure your head explodes or something. Like you're just decimated. You don't like the perfect hole through the head.
Yeah.
It wasn't a sniper rifle. It was.
Yeah. it depends on the caliber, but yeah, I'm pretty sure you'd have had at least like the history of violence, like half a jaw missing. You know, I think
there wasn't any blood that exploded from the back of the head or anything. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I pay for the movie ticket for.
Yeah, dang it. I mean, I don't know if like they were like Eastwood was like, I gotta remain within a rating or something, or if he's like, I'm not spending money on squibs. We had this effect we were gonna do, but the movie's gone to hell now.
There was like a recklessness, I feel like, to the whole movie, and you guys have kind of hit on it with them and how they would just kill people, and as cops, there's kind of like. You kind of have to resort to killing people, I feel like. But these guys are just like, nah, I'm killing everybody, you know?
Like, well, let's be reminded that their department is like auto theft, not like, you know,
suicides or... Not homicide,
not vice.
And like, I don't know how Charlie Sheen is going to get out of burning that bar down, because that had nothing to do with like a crime scene or anything. Like, he was not being assaulted. Like some guy blew smoke.
Yeah, there was like
face.
What, three counts of animal cruelty. yeah, destruction of property, assault of innocent bystanders.
I guess the one thing we can be thankful for is that there wasn't the stereotypical scene in the precinct where the chief is running down the list of all of their offenses.
but speaking of their office, that guy who I don't know which like where what his standing is in the auto theft. Or in the police department, but like the guy that's like in agony over Nick being hostage, and he's like every day, like he's always like sweeping papers off the desk, and he's like, oh, he's so like this was his first and last movie.
Yeah,
he's always like raising his fist to the heavens.
Is this the guy that that was like, it's not a job, it's an effing adventure?
Yes, that guy.
I don't understand how anybody thought that was a good idea to put that into a movie.
That was going to be the quote on our banner, though, when I make it.
He just screamed for no reason, and then it cut to another scene, and you're like, what? I wanted to see how people react to that if somebody was like, hey, Johnson, calm down a little bit there, bro.
It is a job. Like, we have hours and like, benefits, and, you know, we have rules.
What are you talking about?
To fill out all this paperwork. Adventure isn't about paperwork, which, by the way, I didn't get your case report. I want to be like that chief in the police department.
Oh,
man. Yeah, that guy's, like, so dramatic. Like, because there's something about, like, oh, he's already dead. Like, he's just convinced that, like, Clint Eastwood's already dead. Like, he's just, like, there's no hope.
Yeah.
Sweep the papers off the desk.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That's a one-liner terrible. That I wish I had been awake for, because I never saw that in the movie.
I mean, to be fair to Pat, I fell asleep as well during the first watching of this.
Oh, I fell asleep too.
And then I went back and rewatched like the sections that I missed, which again, same thing that you said earlier. Like I figured would kind of enhance the movie going experience, and it didn't in any way. So, yeah, I don't want the listeners to think that Pat's some lazy whatever because I fell asleep right there. Yeah,
it was. I watched it kind of in the span of a year apart, and I didn't miss any narrative continuity.
Well, does anybody have anything kind of positive to say before we wrap it up? Any silver lining to this movie? Anyone?
Well, it's Clint Eastwood, and he always is good. I don't know, like, it's always, like, well, the part, I guess, because it was, like, the last, there's some legend around it, that stunt with the car where they drive it out of the building. There's something about it that's like really special, but I can't remember what it is.
Oh man, I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I can. Let me look it on IMDb like really quick. Let's see, because there's something about how much it cost or something. Yeah. I know there's no stunt doubles. I know it's really them, which is like cool.
Okay.
So that's a silver lining.
Nice. Yeah. Tyler, what about you? Any silver linings?
Like I said, I mean the chase scenes were really good. I guess if you when they were like at the very beginning where he chases down the truck carrying all the cars,
yeah,
I thought that was pretty well done. Although I'm going to say another bad thing, the lighting was terrible. I couldn't see anything in this movie. And,
yeah.
And I would say 90% of this film took place at night. So whenever it was daytime, I was like, hallelujah, I can see who these people are and what they're doing. But if it was dark out and it was nighttime, you better be glad those cars had headlights because I wouldn't know where they were.
Yeah.
And there was one part in the movie, I don't know if you remember, where he the place starts smoking, like the casino.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it zooms to like the bottom of like the booth or whatever, and it's pitch black for a good 4 or 5 seconds. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Oh. And it was just another just poor lighting thing because there was nothing on screen and you were supposed to be seeing something, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that concept that you mentioned, that was actually one of the things that I had written down as kind of a silver lining, was that the concept of clearing out the casino in that way to kind of generate chaos, I thought was at least well conceived, if not well executed. But, yeah.
The ending, although there was, like, a lot of questions of why they're doing this and this, but the ending was pretty fast-paced and exciting, so I mean, I'll give it that much.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, if the last 10 minutes were the entire movie, I'd be like, I'd be down for The Rookie 2, you know, right? Which is what it seems to set up. I did not know this was 1990. Man, I thought it was like 1987. Yeah. Well, that explains why he did it. I think he had to pay Sandra Locke a bunch of money.
Yeah.
It said, okay, here it is. The film featured over twice as many stuntmen as it did actors. It held the world record for biggest ratio of stuntmen-actors.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
The Rookie, who knew?
Little notoriety there, okay.
But it doesn't say what it lost the world record to. Like that, I'm kind of curious, like what...
Oh,
what
yeah.
Are you sure the stunt doubles weren't acting in it? That's why the acting was so bad?
I'm kind of... Well, they say stuntmen / actors, so I think that it's an adventure!
He was also, like, the car driver on the highway scene or something.
Yeah. He's like, all right, I got an Eastwood movie. This is, like, my biggest break ever.
I mean,
legitimate actors kept dropping out of the movie, so they had to replace them with stunt doubles.
It's conceivably possible. I mean, Eastwood loves to save money and only shoot exactly what he needs to. He's, like, notorious for stuff like that. So maybe he's like, all right, get up there, throw on a suit, and get in the police precinct. You're good to go.
This is your big break. Don't ruin it.
Yeah. The only other thing that I wanted to mention as being, like, relatively I don't know if I want to say inventive, because I've probably seen this in a movie somewhere. I just can't remember the last time I saw it. Was the part where Raul Julia and Sonia Braga, like, break into the safe. Like, they use the bank teller or whatever to kind of open the – or I'm sorry, it's at the casino. They use him to, like, open up the safe. And then Eastwood and Charlie Sheen are inside there, like, with guns. Oh, yeah. And they, like, walk out. And I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. Like, I didn't necessarily see that coming. I thought that was kind of a cool concept. But, again, I'm sure that's been done on film before. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think we've pretty much taken talked more than anyone should about this movie.
Yeah, really.
It is. I mean, it is the only film that Eastwood gets raped. I mean,
yeah.
I think that's a plus. And he still lit it in the silhouette that he always lights stuff in. I thought it was like, oh, it's your Bridges to Madison film. County lighting.
Yeah, there's it's probably notable to mention that he made this and then Nothing in 1991 and then Unforgiven immediately afterwards in 1992.
Wow.
So I mean,
it's a very good point that you bring up, because like that's why Warner Brothers wouldn't give him the money for Unforgiven. Like The Rookie was one that had done so badly, they were like, no, you don't get to make your Western. And that's why he had to make it with somebody else. I can't remember if that's who that's with now, but yeah, okay. They wouldn't make it. It ended up being a huge mistake because it was like one of the biggest movies of that year. And
yeah, definitely.
But because of The Rookie, like that's, he didn't make Unforgiven with them.
Okay.
So. It was also a really good movie. So
yeah,
not like it sucked.
Like he took
like
some time off and I don't know, like spent some time in Carmel and
yeah, really.
I need to get back to what made me good. I'm looking at at Unforgiven, like what studio it is. Let's see, because I'm curious about that now.
I think it did say Warner Brothers, didn't it?
Maybe it is. I mean, maybe they gave it to him after all.
Maybe they denied him for a year.
Yeah, they were like, hold out. We can get him cheaper.
Forced him to take 1991 off.
Maybe Charlie Sheen was playing Morgan Freeman's character for the longest time until they... Charlie Sheen can't be in this movie.
Okay,
please.
It is a Warner Brothers, so that's the one poster book I have is kind of wrong.
Huh.
I guess it still holds true that they were like, I don't know if we'll bankroll you on this one.
Angry letter time.
Maybe if you get more, yeah, maybe you get Morgan Freeman in the part of Ned. Not with Charlie Sheen, it's Gene Hackman. Billy the
All right.
Yeah,
Charlie Sheen playing the guy who can't see in Unforgiven. He's kind of an annoying character, although he was really good in Unforgiven.
Yeah.
The Schofield kid.
Yeah.
That actually would have been like the same character. I mean, he could have been like, oh, kicking the grass.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
can see just fine. It's hard to imagine Sheen being able to knock out the scene of, you know, a funny thing, killing a man, like the trembling hand on the bottle.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, he would have bombed that.
Sorry, Charlie, for calling him like we see it.
Sorry, Charlie, indeed. That's awesome. If we were naming this podcast based on quotes that we said during the individual episodes, this one would be called Sorry, Charlie. So, Tyler, why don't you... Tyler, go ahead and rev up the old Deus Ex Machina Apple II and let us know what random movie we're going to be watching next week.
Sure, no problem. Let me get it started. Oh, it's going to be based on the Stephen King short story, Body, is the movie Stand By Me with Corey Feldman and some other kids.
Kiefer Sutherland, I think, is in that as well.
Yeah, and Jerry O'Connell.
All right. Good stuff. Well, yeah, listeners, if you want to watch Stand By Me, I believe it's on Netflix Watch Instantly. So feel free to check that out and then listen into the show next week. Before we go, let's just check out a little bit of the listener email here. Got one. Says, hello, Ben. It's Pat and Traverse. I don't know. This guy is apparently taken to giving us strange names. He says, this is the most... poorly lit movie I've ever seen. Now I know what it feels like to be blind like Marley Maitland. Anyway, disappointing effort, and Chuck Sheen didn't even get naked once. Stay balmy, Skeeg Trulock. Well, thank you, Skeeg, for that email. And yeah, I think you're pretty much mirroring our sentiments about this movie, with the exception of I, for one, didn't really need to see Charlie Sheen naked.
Yeah, I don't want to see Clint Eastwood naked at this point either.
Yeah, not nice.
He wasn't as tight as he once was.
I don't know, that rape scene, man.
Yeah, I'm going to someday, I think, just scare a boyfriend on their birthday. I'm going to try and reenact that scene.
Oh, God. Razor blade and all.
I thought guys liked it. No, I won't be using any razor blades. Which gotta give her props to the. Maybe that's what I'll do. Like if for like our anniversary, like here's the bullet. We totally forgot to bring that up.
Wow.
And if the other one dies, the other one uses it to blow their head off.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
You might want to show them that movie first before you pull all this stuff out.
No, I don't think I want to see it again. I don't think I want to base my romantic relationship on the rookie.
All right. Well, one other email we have is from Brandon. He says, hey, guys, here's a suggestion for the character name game. The character goes by the name of Earl McGraw. Hint, if you so choose to use it, the character is in more than one movie. So since Tyler already said the character, why don't we just try to guess this one real quick? Anybody know what Earl McGraw comes from? Does that sound familiar to anyone? I can't think of it off the top of my head.
City Slickers. I don't know.
City Slickers might be a good guess.
Sounds like yeah, it does sound like a Western name. Like I was gonna go with Lonesome Dove or something like that. Because he says character, he doesn't say actor.
Right.
So it may have been portrayed by a different guy. And I know there's been a couple Lonesome Dove.
I gotcha.
Can't really. I don't think there's anybody named Earl McGraw though, because there's Augustus McCrae and
Gus.
Gus and I can't remember the
Tommy Lee Jones's
character, but it's not
I can't think of Earl McGraw. Let me look it up here on IMDb. It says From Dusk Till Dawn, played by Michael Parks, and then also in Machete.
Yeah, because isn't that one of the it's one of the repeating characters like that.
Nice.
That's a Robert Rodriguez project, so that makes sense considering he's got, you know, the same actors playing a lot of the same characters in his movies. All right, well, cool. Well, thanks for the email, Brandon. And Tyler, why don't you repeat for us one more time the character that you said in the beginning, and we'll try to guess that one real quick before we wrap it up.
All right. The Guess That Character movie game name is Joshua Foss.
Oh, it's Joshua. I was thinking it was Jonathan because I was going to say everything is illuminated, but it's not that.
Joshua, like FOSS, is that right?
That is correct. I'm getting my game show voice.
Yeah. Pat, do you have any guesses?
Let's spin the wheel.
I don't know. Pearl Harbor.
Incorrect. Would you like the year or the man who portrayed him?
Let's go – give us the year the movie came out first. Let's see if we can narrow it down that way.
1995.
Okay, that didn't help me in the least. All right, so what was the option that you gave? The
man who played it?
Yeah.
Powers Booth.
Ooh.
Oh. What did he – let's see. Powers Booth did
– 1995. That's got to be
– Mission Impossible.
No, it's got to be Sudden Death, right?
Oh, that is correct, sir.
the Jean-Claude Excellent Van Damme film. Hockey movie, right?
Excellent film. Have you ever seen that, Elizabeth?
I haven't. I'm so behind on my Van Damme movies. Like
Listen, Tyler is a huge Van Damme fan. I'm not nearly as big as he is, but I think that one is probably well worth watching just for the sheer ridiculousness of it.
I'm done studying Eastwood. I mean, I've learned all I can learn.
Yeah.
So I need to move.
So the natural progression is to move on to Van Damme.
To Jean-Claude Van Damme. Well, it's like
please don't start with Cyborg.
Yeah, Cyborg.
No,
is terrible.
No, I won't. I won't start with Cyborg.
Start with
it's weird. Like I don't know. Like the '90s passed me by on a lot of action movies because I was watching like all the. You know, it was like Mel Gibson was like my man in the '90s, and I'd watch anything else by with anybody. And,
yeah.
So yeah, it's a weak point of my education. I can readily admit that.
All right. Well, thanks for the emails, guys. If anyone else wants to email us, feel free. You can do that at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. We're also searchable in iTunes. You guys can type in the Not Just New Movies podcast there. Subscribe to us for free. And you can also find us on Facebook. We've got a Facebook page. You can just type in the Not Just New Movies podcast, and you'll find us there as well. Why don't we go around the circle real quick and just tell everybody where we can find more of your work on the internet. Pat, how about you?
You can still find me at the-life-after.blogspot.com.
Good stuff. All right, Tyler.
TheSolarSentinel.blogspot.com. I run a blog called The Solar Sentinel. It covers everything in pop culture and pretty much all of that. And then that other blog you mentioned, it's like a wrestling narrative with me and my friend Panther Joe. It's DestaGeddon.blogspot.com. If you know how to spell it, you deserve to go to DestaGeddon. So.
Fantastic. Elizabeth Rapp, how about you?
Film.com and Chud.com.
And you're also on Twitter, is that right?
Yes, and on Twitter at twitter.com/ElizabethRapp. Elizabeth with an S, because apparently nobody catches that.
Yes, and Rapp with two P's and an E.
Yeah, the most obscure spelling ever.
Cool. Well, you guys can track me down at twitter.com/BenPears. That's BenPears. Also writing for GeekTyrant.com, Filmonic.com, and NotJustNewMovies.com, the blog that is the namesake for this podcast. You can also find Pat and I on the Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast. Music for our show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at GTBandits.com, and they're also on Twitter and Facebook, so you feel free to check them out there. Guys, thanks so much for joining. Elizabeth, special thanks to you for taking the time out. Really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. You know me. It's like Clint Eastwood.
I knew I could lure you in with that.
Now you're like, if you want to come out, yeah.
Cool. Well, again, guys, Stand By Me is what we're going to be talking about next week, so feel free to check that out and then listen in next week. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys later. I've got the blues. I've got the blues for you, yeah. Money that I had.